David B. is our speaker tonight.
Thank you, David.
My name's David. I'm an alcoholic. Conveniently left all the money for me right here. I like this meeting. I really do. I am honored to be here. I'm grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to really thank my friend Lee C. for asking me to come up here. He's heard me before, and yet he still has asked me to come up here and talk to you guys. So I'm humbled by the people I get to hang out with in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank my friend Mike Neuron from coming up from Goleta or somewhere foreign like that. And little Joe, I've known these guys for almost my entire length of sobriety, and I got sober on August 30th, 1997, and I still know people. I have friends from August 30th, 1997 until now. It's awesome. Like, this was not my experience before. It just wasn't, and you'll know why. Long story short, things tended to come up missing when I drank. Everything came up missing. Didn't matter who you were, and I would have a friend up until the minute I stole all the shit, right? And then I got to find a new friend, right? And then steal his stuff. And I had a little pattern going. I'm from Laguna Beach. I wasn't born there, but that's all I remember. And my dad was one of the first professors hired at UCI Irvine. He's still doing it. He's a professor emeritus, but he's still has the university privileges, still has the same secretary, still writes papers, still goes in conventions or whatever and talks about whatever mathematical anthropology is. I couldn't tell you. I don't know what my dad does for a living. I couldn't really tell. I have his phone number if you'd like to ask him afterwards. He's really smart. That's all. I know that. He's really smart. And he's like a little kid, right? I really want to be my father's son. I really, really do. And that was never the case before. I don't know why. I was ashamed of my dad for some reason. I called him John until I was in my 20s. I never called him dad. We had a really, really good disconnect going. And I don't know. No, he wasn't. Growing up as a kid, I don't remember ever getting beat, but I remember the threat of getting beat. I don't remember there being violence, but I remember the feeling that there may be. And it kind of, I think, translated into the same thing on the inside of me. There was fear. It was just generated fear inside me, and I didn't know how to connect with my dad because of that. And my mom as well. You know, because she was going through whatever my dad was going through, and they teamed up on whatever was going on wrong with this very, very sensitive pre-alcoholic kid. That was like a time bomb waiting for the first drink, right? And I found that time bomb. It was in seventh grade. In seventh grade, this is where I was in life. I was, I'd been skipped ahead into the eighth grade, right? I had a lot of potential. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me the true meaning of the word potential. Right? I can't swear from up here, but it means you haven't done it yet, right? You haven't done anything. You have potential. So they skipped me ahead to this class, and I remember a lot of pressure, right? Now I'm trying to catch up, and I was school safety. Does anybody know what that is? If I caught you smoking out behind the bathroom, somebody know. I was a little schoolyard rat, right? That's what I was. I'm sorry, Mike. I know you didn't know that about me. You know? Don't tell the fellas. So this is what I was, with no friends, none. But then some guys, I think they got tired of me writing their name down and getting them in trouble, right? But these guys invited me down below, behind the banks, down the banks from Thurston Junior High School in Laguna Beach, down to where all the stoners hang out. And they said, yeah, we got this. I believe it was the same old, same old. It's like three quarters of us. Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill, right? And it sounded really attractive to me. It still does. And so I went down there and I drank it with them, right? And I don't remember this huge feeling of relief, but I do remember laughing with other people. World changing for me. I remember laughing and being a part of other people, what was going on. So I chased that feeling for the next 24 years. I was, what would you say? School didn't count anymore. I got pretty much nothing but what do you call it? Incompletes. In order to get an F, you got to show up and do really badly. Right? I couldn't even show up anymore. I was not even there. I was gone. My parents didn't know what to do. They swung from one edge to the other. They were extreme, like locked down. We'll take you to juvenile hall and have you locked up, authoritarian rule, or do whatever you want. Just please let us know you're okay, right? So I'd be gone. So I'd either be gone for days or I'd be in juvenile hall, right? And I was in juvenile hall like 8 times, and I was in four. I was sentenced to 4 camps, right? They had camps for juveniles in Orange County at that time. So I was at every camp that Orange County had. I ended up there. I ended up at a rehab before it was fashionable to be at rehabs. In 1975, I was at CDU, which was an offshoot of Synanon, which meant see yourself, do something about it. All I know is my ability to drink and do whatever else was just accelerated after that place. It was like I'm 15 years old and I'm sitting in these attack rap therapy groups with fully grown people that have gnarly stories, listening to this and going, oh my God. And instead of being scared straight, I was like, I can't wait to try that. Oh my gosh, you did what? It's like I had a little internal list, and all those things and more came true, right? I did all that and more. And then I graduated. I turned 18. I went to California Youth Authority. In California Youth Authority, the little skateboard punk rat-ass kid from Laguna Beach had a really, really hard learning curve, right? I walked in there, and the first thing I did was I looked at this guy that was smoking a cigarette, right? We didn't have cigarettes in juvenile hall. And this guy's got a cigarette. He's smoking a cigarette. And he sees me looking at it, right? And he goes, oh, you want some of this? And I went, yeah. So I'm smoking the cigarette, and I realized that every white boy in that room was pinning me with, this was a black man I just bought a cigarette from that he was smoking, right? I didn't know any of these little laws and rules that they got in there, right? I didn't know. I come from university stock, right? We're not... All we see is your SAT scores, right? We don't see the color of your skin. We don't know anything about that. You know? So I had to learn real fast. But I'm a professor's son from Laguna Beach, and it's not too difficult. It's not like there's a bunch of Einsteins in there I got to figure out, right? We're really, really not, right? And I did, and I figured it out. Wonderful. I figured out how to learn and fit in. And be a part of prison life. I don't remember growing up and going, you know what? I think I'm going to end up an alcoholic with outside issues and just commit crimes on people and take all their things and have the judge gavel me away and spend over 24 years in as an adult locked up in various penitentiaries. I think that's... Man, it sounds like a really good path in life, and I'm going to see what that's like. But anywhere along the way, if you had talked to me, I'd have been like, "What are you talking about? That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen." I don't know what it takes to interrupt me, right? Well, I know what it takes to interrupt me. Now I don't know what it takes to interrupt other people. That's pretty much their path. You know? As we all are on our own path. But that's what it took for me. So I went from California Youth Authority to Oregon State Penitentiary. From Oregon State Penitentiary, I then got another. I was never out longer than 6 months. I went to, from Oregon State Penitentiary, got out 6 months, went to Soledad Penitentiary in the mid-80s. I was in Soledad Penitentiary for almost 5 years. I went from Soledad, I was out for 6 months. I went to Mule Creek Prison and Tehachapi Prison. And during this time, I got clean and sober. I was clean and sober at Tehachapi Prison for between while I was in and the 3 months I stayed sober when I got out, almost 4 years. And the Pathfinders group they have up there, it's a really old, well-known group, extremely well-attended by the H&I members, right? There was, I met some really fabulous people. I met this woman named Angie. I don't know if anybody has ever heard of Angie up here, but she was legendary in Southern California, in the Orange County and L.A. area. Paramount Snake Pit was her home group. And Angie, the last time I saw her, she was, I think she was 96, and she was surrounded by women. Just, I mean, she was at the end of days, right? And she was infirm and she couldn't use her leg, but she still had that smile. Her mind was going too, right? But she still had that sparkling AA smile. And she used to share, and she was a little tiny Chicana, right? And she used to stick her fat little lower lip out, and this is how she would end every share. She used to say, "Finally, I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it." I got out of prison this last time, right, and I'll get to that what happened. But I got out of prison this last time and went to the Orange County H&I convention. And after the Saturday night speaker meet, I hadn't seen her yet. Angie was there. This was like 2005 or 2006. She was there after the Saturday night speaker meeting. Is the dance afterwards, right? I went out there to check out all the kids dancing, right? And all the people dancing. And there's Angie. It's like 92 or 93, right? Out there cutting it up, right? Out on the rug, right? And I'm like, she'd done H&I for the entire length of her sobriety. She died with, I think, 55 years of sobriety. Wow. 55-year member of H&I. 55 years of carrying hope into the dark places of this world, into the dark hearts of people that don't know that they're good people. They're just alcoholic on the inside. So I met people like her. I met a guy named Jack P. Jack Prose. He's passed away. I was waiting for him, right? I'd heard about him. He was a great big Norwegian gentleman, right? And he had been sober forever, too. He had carried a panel in. He was one of the guys that had gone in at San Quentin in 1942 when Warden Duffy opened up the doors of the penal systems of California to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was on that panel. He had gone in there, right? And so I'm waiting for this guy, right? He's up at the podium, and I'm waiting for him to just... I'm waiting for manna from heaven. I've noticed this about me and AA and the rest of us as well. We all want certainty. I want to hear the words that I know I can apply to my life and make it all work. To make whatever shift that is that has to happen to have that psychic change so that I can live in this world without wanting to scream right half the time. I'm 19 years sober and I still want to scream on a semi-paw. Sometimes there's days where I don't feel that way, sometimes. But usually there's a point in the day where I want to scream. It just is. You know, I get over it, you know, and there's points in the day where I'm crying tears of gratitude. Right? But I've noticed that we all want, I want the certainty. I want to hear the magic words that makes it all work. It makes it all click. Well, Jack Prose got up there, and for 10 minutes, he told dirty jokes at the podium. I was like, what? What is this? But, there I go again. There is nobody up here at the podium at any time but a drunk whose main story is I failed miserably until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I worked the 12 steps and I began to do what you guys taught me to do. And then I didn't fail so much. I stopped drinking. I don't fail so much today. I really don't. And it feels much better in here. So during that period of sobriety, this is what happened to me. I thought that I had arrived. I've got 3 years, 10 months of sobriety. Right? I got out, and I got a bumper sticker for my car and it said, expect a miracle. I was that miracle. Right? So that was how I felt. Because like, oh, this is miraculous. I was like taking credit for it. What happened was God gave me a brief, here you go, let's see what you do with it. I didn't work the steps. I didn't get a sponsor. Well, I did get a sponsor. I actually chose the guy to sponsor me who knew me best. Right? So I sponsored myself. And I worked the steps as I saw fit. Because who would know better than me what steps I need to work? Right? So then this is what happened. When I got out, I paroled myself to a place called the Rock Center in Orange County. And it's a low bottom indigent detox / recovery house, right? I had nowhere to go. I had nowhere else to go. And I figured, well, I can help all these spin dry people coming in here because I mentioned I had almost 4 years sobriety, right? And the people running the place could help me. They could teach me how to live clean and sober on the streets. Great plan. It was my sponsor who had told me that this would probably work for me. And while I was there, you know how water seeks its lowest level, right? So I'm not there 2 weeks. I'm hanging out with an ex-bank robber and another ex-felon. We're those tres amigos, right? Us three were like inseparable because we were lowest common denominator was ourselves. And the bank robber, he was known as Phil, Gentleman Bandit. His name was Phil. He was the Gentleman Bandit of Orange County and L.A. County during the early 80s, right? And he robbed like 63 banks. And we couldn't, you know, they want to take you to different meetings and stuff, and they put us on the druggy buggy and drive us in there. And we'd go by banks, and he would look like Linda Blair. His head would flip around. So he'd be like, did you see that? They don't even have a guard outside that bank. Are you kidding me, man? How easy is that? And I'm like, bro, quit romancing the stone, man. It's over, right? It's done, man. They caught you already, man. Stop it. Meanwhile, my head is filing all this information away. I wish to God that I could learn good stuff as solidly and as deeply as I learned the bad. I really do. You know, I wouldn't feel like screaming so much on a regular basis, I tell you that. But so anyway, when the time came, when the test came, and I did not have a spiritual defense against that first drink, because I had not worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and got myself out of the way enough so that God greater than myself, working through you, could stand in between me and that first drink. Simple. I almost swore. Simple equation. My dad could tell me about all that very easily, right? I hadn't done that. The test will come. I failed the test, and I burned every bridge really quickly, like within a couple months. I borrowed from everybody I could borrow from. I stole from my work. They were looking for me already. It wasn't like a heavy case for the police, but I had stole the pizzas. The best job I could get was delivering pizzas, right? I'm 33 years old, and I'm delivering pizzas, and I stole all the receipts for one night because I just couldn't get enough. And then I started thinking about all the things I'd filed away from Phil. And I went down to my dad's bank, on World Savings Bank on Broadway, and robbed the bank. Now, did you ever see that movie Heat with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro? It was nothing like that. It was as pitiful and low bottom as you could possibly imagine. I was doing foot escapes, right? High speed, but foot escapes. The tellers were arguing with me, right? They'd be like, really? I'm like, well, yeah. And they said, look, you really don't want to do this. I'm like, do I? No, yeah, I do. Look, I've already done it, so come on. I mean, this isn't the first one. It doesn't matter from this point on. Now, let's just do this, right? And one time I gave them my fingerprints, right? Put my fingerprint. I said, here, this will help with the FBI investigation. Because they always investigate to see if it's an inside job. you know, the $200 bank robbery that I'm, they want to know if it's an inside job, right? So we interview them for hours and hours. And my headlines were like, mild-mannered man robs bank. Now, I tested out, now I understand, right, that this is just potential, right? But I tested out high 140s in the IQ test. High. I should have, you know, my folks and stuff, my mom's smarter than my dad is. My sister's an opera singer. She speaks 5 languages. The whole family reads like a who's who in intellectual achievement, right? I should have been like a little Lex Luthor, criminal genius, right? It should have been an empire stretching across the face of America and reaching its tendrils out across the world. That still sounds good. Alcoholic grandiosity, one more time. But it was pitiful. It was so bad. It was so bad. And I robbed 8 banks that way. And I got arrested. And they gave me 151 months. 151 months where I did, you know, of course, math whiz, inherited, right? It's 12 years, 7 months. And I'm like, I'm not going to have any hair left on my head when I get out of this sentence, right? And pretty much didn't. But it was, I didn't want to do it, right? I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to escape. I'm going to escape. Because I was only in an FCI, right? They put me in a Federal Correctional Institute, which means it was lesser security. It was in Sheridan, in Oregon. It was lesser security. Because of their surrounding community, they didn't have any gun towers, right? They wouldn't allow gun towers at this place. So I'm like, oh, so I'm out of here. I'm gone. Well, they had electronic sensors on the fence. They had a triple fence. I might be confusing this with long pole. But no, they had a triple fence filled with razor wire. Like, not just, as, it was just like a solid piece of razor wire. Just so many strands through there. They had roving trucks that just drove around the place. That was their gun towers, these roving trucks. They had movable gun towers is what they had. And they would do things like shut the yard down if there was a stiff breeze, right? Because we might parasail out of there, right? Or something. So it's like, okay, I'm probably not escaping. Probably not. I can't even figure out how to rob a bank correctly. Right? I literally got $247 in a bank robbery. I could have got that from the corner liquor store, right? I was but this is what I found in Lompoc. I mean, I'm confusing my penitentiaries now. Thank you guys so much for this theme. I didn't want to come tonight, man. It was like PTSD. You know? Oh, God. And then my buddy Mike's wearing khakis, right? I'm like, never, never wear khakis ever again. 11 years of khakis. It's not in my closet. But this is fun. It's so much fun. And so what happened at Sheridan was I realized that I don't have to stop. It was ongoing party still in there, and they were cooking. We weren't even drinking Pruno anymore. We were cooking it. Alcohol boils off at 167 degrees. Water 220 or 222, whatever it is, right? So we were cooking off the alcohol, siphoning it off through tubes, and drinking water bottles on the yard that were not water, and everything else that you could fill in, right? Outside issues, right? It was crazy, crazy ongoing party. And I couldn't yank my own chain. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know when to stop. I can't stop even with my life's at jeopardy. I can't stop. I can't stop in a place where I'm putting my life in jeopardy and there's nowhere to run. I can't, like, move across the United States, right? I'm in the penitentiary. They're not allowing me to go very far from these guys I owe all this money to. So, I'm a professor's son from Laguna Beach. I can figure this stuff out. I burglarized the commissary. So, I burglarized the commissary, and I quickly am arrested, right? Because, you know, there's no honor among thieves. There was like 11 notes on the lieutenant's desk the next morning after I burglarized the commissary, right? Boyd did it, right? Thanks. So for the next year, I'm under arrest while under arrest in the hole. And I'm thinking about, man, what am I doing here? What is going on in my life? I'm 34, 35 years old. I'm in the middle, actually the beginning of my fifth prison sentence as an adult. I'm a five-time loser. I'm 35 years old. And now I'm sitting in the hole for like indefinitely until, they'll just sit you in the hole until you tell on yourself, right? Apparently it doesn't count. The 11 notes didn't count, right? Because they won't use that against you. You have to tell on yourself, or they have to catch you with evidence or something. I don't know. But I'm like, I'm not telling on myself. So I'm just sitting there in the hole. They come in and interview me once a week. And I'm just thinking, wait a minute, I'm telling someone else's story, man. I wasn't thinking about it at all. I was actually cooking pruno in my cell while I was in there, in the hole, which they shake down every day, right? Rather than think about what had got me there, rather than stop and smell the roses, figuratively, right? I was continuing to, you cannot stop an alcoholic who does not want to stop drinking. You cannot. My friend Pat O says, I love this, I steal this always, because it described me to a T. If you tried to stand in between me and a drink, you were going to lose. I don't care who you were. I don't care if Jesus came down off the cross, man, to stand in between me and a drink. I'm going to circumvent that dude somehow, right? Somehow it's going to happen, and I'm going to drink. I got to tell this story because it was so much fun. While I was in there, I mistimed one of my batches. Right, I mistimed it because they move you every 2 weeks. They change your cell location because they give us these plastic sporks, and they figure, well, we might be tunneling out, right, with these plastic sporks if they leave us in the same cell for long enough, right, like 1,000 years. we might be able to tunnel out. So I mistimed my batch. They come and tell me to move, and I'm tired. I'm really tired by this time. I've been in there almost a year, and they're going to ruin this batch, and it's a good one, right? It's a good batch, man, but it's not ready. I can't drink it now. It'd just give me bathroom issues if I drank it right now. It wouldn't be good. So I told them, no, I'm not going to move. And before you guys laugh at this, I want to tell you, I was serious about it. I had a little bulk on me from the weight pile, right? And I'd grow this Fu Manchu, right? And I had my head completely shaved. You know, I wouldn't wear my glasses because I didn't look tough enough, so I would have to squint to see, right? Be like Mad Dog in the World all the time, right? People actually want twice, not always, but twice, dudes wanted to fight me because I thought I was Mad Dogging them across the yard, man. I'm like, bro, I can't even see you. I'm trying to see you. So they come with this team, right? This like Ninja Turtle team. You can't even tell they're human. And they go team up, and they open the door, and they just one pushes on the other, and they come in, and whoop, and they slip out on the stuff I put on the floor, right? And the lotion I put on the floor, and I got all these sheets, you know, hanging from the ceiling, and they're pulling all those down. They're looking around, and they can't find me. Right? They're looking around. I'm underneath the bed, behind a welded-in shelf that goes underneath the bed with a square hole about 12 inches, maybe, at the end, where if you're really wiry and wormy, you can squeeze into and get back behind that shelf. They're not getting me out of that cell. They're not. They tried. But I had Bisqueen over my face, right, for the tear gas. I had a towel over my head, right, a wet towel over my face so I didn't inhale the tear gas. And I'm all strapped up, you know, and I'm braced in there. And they were reaching in there and trying to tear the stuff away from my eyes so they could gas me. And I'm taking their gloves off. And once I take their gloves off, they're not trying to reach in there anymore. You know, 'cause I've got a weapon, right? You know, that movie with Hannibal Lecter had come out, right? And they were, you know, like, oh, we're not putting our hands underneath there. But then the camera disappeared. Right? They're videotaping this whole thing, right? So they can see what professionals they are. But then the professionals are failing, right? So the camera disappears. And I know what time it is. I'm Professor Sun from Laguna Beach, man. I know what time it is now. Now it's broomsticks, right? And mop handles and God knows what. I know what's coming now, right? They've got weapons of mass. They've got not nice things there in the hole. They like put them on display, right? They're like cases of. So when you're getting booked in there, right? You're like, oh, my God, man, was this medieval times here or something? And it's not going to be good. So, well, the whole time this is going on, they're wanting to come to a resolution, right? I know they are, right? And it's not going to be nice for me. Their idea of this resolution. So I figured they're wanting to come to a resolution because while this is going on, I want to say that, you know, you've seen like Shell Extraction, San Quentin, and it's like, and the whole thing is like, man, this is gnarly stuff, right? This is crazy stuff going on, man. This is like something, you know, they make movies out of or something. This is like man up prison movie hardcore stuff, right? Except for the fact that I was screaming like a little girl the whole entire time this was going on. I was like, yeah! You know, like they were killing me, right? This is what I was screaming like, right? And the rest of the hole heard that, right? So they think that, well, they're killing an inmate, right? They're killing him over there, right? And so they're going off. They're flooding their cell out. They're lighting their mattresses on fire. They're starting to choke from their mattresses being on fire. And they're banging on their doors. It's like, man, this is some serious solidarity we got going on here. I know they want to come to a resolution to all this, right? So I tell them, all right, I'll give up. If you all, I wanted some kind of, I have not had any victories in my life at all to this point. I wanted a moral victory like you've got no idea how much I wanted to win this one. There's no winning against the federal government. But I wanted to win it anyway. So I asked him to please step out of, if you guys step out of the room and lock the door, I'll come out, I'll interlace my fingers and lay face down on the ground. Right. And I did it, and they came in, and they were totally professional. And I couldn't believe, I thought I was going to get whooped, right? Totally, completely professional, except they trussed me up like a Thanksgiving turkey and marched me up and down the halls to show everybody, look, we didn't kill him, we got the little baby goose, you know, trussed up like for sacrifice, right? But we didn't kill him. Calm down, right? And then they shipped me to USP Lompoc Federal Penitentiary, right, as a thank you. I wasn't there a month before I got arrested again. So now I'm under arrest again. And I'm in the hole for 90 days. And I get out, and I get in with this dude that had more game for a convict than anybody I'd ever seen. This guy had so much game. He was a member of a street gang called Suicidal Tendencies, right? Well, I guess the band had come from that. But he had connections. He had game. He had hustle. And the last thing I remember doing was forging these documents that were called send-out forms, where you could send money from your accounts out to any address you wanted on the street, right? It was a terrific way to pay for drugs and alcohol while you were in prison, right? We really appreciated the federal government to do that for us. And I was forging them, right? They had a little stamp sticker that was kind of tricky. I had to like make my own form, like make my own stamp, right? And then mix up the pigments from the artwork I was doing, right? And just have it perfect and go, it was a paid stamp, right? And we go out and show the dudes and go, here, man, here's your money, give us our stuff. And we take their stuff and go back and laugh, right? And do whatever we were doing and then watch them sweat their people. I know that money's there, I saw the form, right? And we'd be like, I hope that doesn't come back to bite me, right? Because I'm doing this to people that you don't want to mess with in there. I'm doing this to members of other races, other gangs from other states. You know, like, they're organized, right? Like, that's like, the, you don't want to mess with these people. And we don't need, I don't even care at this point. I don't even care. What happened to me was a man named 6'8 came to my cell and he said, here, take this. When can you pay me? And I said, sure, I'll take that. I'll pay you in 2 weeks. And I had no idea how I was going to pay this man in 2 weeks. Had no idea. It was, I'd crossed the line in the sand without even thinking about it. Right? I did pay him, though. I did pay him in 2 weeks. But I didn't know at that moment that I was going to be able to do that. His name was 6'8". That was a description of his size. It was an understatement. He was like 6'10", easy, and as broad. He would have to shrink down into the cell and then expand on you to come collect his money from you. I paid him 2 weeks. I think I paid him 12 days. But that being said, this was the last thing that happened to me. This was it. This was the final ticket, right? On the scale of things I've done in my life, it's like nothing. It sure didn't make my fist step, right? It was like, what? That's nothing. You know, that's an everyday thing. No big deal, sir. But it was the straw that broke the camel's back. The bag was full. The end had come. The garbage pile of wrong actions that I was had filled up. The pail was full, and I couldn't stand it anymore. I woke up that next morning so disgusted with myself and where I was in life. I woke up feeling like I should have done when I went to the hole that first time, when I was in the hole for a year. And I walked down the tier, and I met a couple guys. I knew these guys were different. They had stuff in their cell. They weren't giving it to the dope man or the alcohol, or the whoever was cooking the prune. They were keeping all their stuff, and they weren't partying it up like we were, right? There was a rare dude in there that was like this, right? And I walked up to these two dudes and I said, hey, is there any meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in here? Real quietly, right? So, you got your reputation to consider in places like that. Right? I'm worried about my reputation at this time. So these guys, you know what happens, you know? They start talking really loud. I had to shush them down, right? They got these big stupid smiles and they started talking about becoming men of dignity and honor on a prison yard. I'd never heard this before in a penitentiary. I'd never heard this for sure in a penitentiary referred to that it might be a possibility for me. These two words were so far removed from my life. Dignity and honor. I think my friend Tim W. coined it, but he called it the golden age of recovery in USP Lompoc Federal Penitentiary. My friend Lee C. was wearing two hats at the time, right? He was a damn cop, man. He was a federal correctional officer, right? Hate you, man. And he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love you so much for that. Because that's the only hat I want. That's the only hat I needed at that time. And he showed us how it's done. He showed us. He facilitated it. He brought speakers in there he was a speaker getter for Royal Grandy, and he used to bring them to us first, and then they got to hear whatever they had left at night. Right? I don't think they had much left because they gave us all they had, man. I remember sitting there twice. He came in, this man named, now I'm going to forget his name. This man named Cliff R. from Oceanside came in twice. And I'm sitting in the front row watching this man who spoke before thousands, right? Talk to 20, 25, 30 sullen convicts with their arms crossed, thinking about what's this guy going to tell me, right? And he's bringing it, man. He's crying tears of gratitude and joy for what's been offered him in the program of AA, for the incredible turnaround in his life. He's literally tears rolling down onto the soup. And I didn't care. At that moment, I did not care anymore what was going to happen to me if I worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted what he had, something fierce. Him, Lee, Curtis Larkin, all the other people that came up from that. It was, for me, this is what it was like. It was like the moment I raised my hand and said, God help me, he went, Okay, sure. And he rearranged, he changed the entire world to help me. That's what it feels like. That's what it still feels like today. When I, because I just, man, I get up in the morning and I say my prayer, and then I go about trying to wield my will upon the world, right? And it's difficult, and I want to scream, and then I remember, and I surrender, and then God goes, okay, I'm going to mold the world again for to help you, right? It's the slowest learning lesson. I'm like, when am I going to remember this? I don't have to go through that again and again and again. But this is what I learned. I worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as if my life depended upon it, because it did. It's designed to get rid of all the things standing in the way of me and you. It's designed to get rid of all standing in the way of me and the power of God that can come work in my life. You know, I'm an electrician, and I understand potential, the word potential applied to electricity. I understand the word impedance we call it, right? That's what my ego is. It stops the flow. The potential means nothing unless the amperage is flowing through. The amperage is what gets the power done. The amperage is what drives the load, and amazing things happen. Incredible stuff happens. The more amperage I get flowing, the more power, the more work can be done. I was so afraid because of all the things I'd done. I'm so afraid because if I tell you the stuff that I've done in my life, that's it, man. That's it. I'm done. I live my life taking that stuff to the grave with me. I knew it. And there's more than one thing. It's not just like one particular thing I've done, right? There's a bunch of stuff, man, like ongoing, you know, and stuff I blocked out. I blocked one out, and I've been sharing this lately because it's so crazy what the human brain will do, my brain will do to me. And when I was 18, I went to my grandmother's house. I was in the middle of a sick one, right? I went to my grandmother's house in Oregon. Thought it was my birthday. I thought I would come up, right? She'd give me a couple hundred or something, right? Keep this party going. And she was just like not really even happy to see me. She gave me a case of Capri Sun juices. What am I going to do with this, right? So I burglarized her neighbor's house. Didn't get anything, but trashed the place. Trashed it. Right? All drunk. Right? She didn't know this yet, but then she sent me to her other neighbor's house. This old, old, old woman, right? She was a widow. She was completely blind. But she wanted to meet Nina's grandson. So I'm her only grandson. And I go over there and I see the lady's completely blind. And I ask her if I can use her restroom, and I walk down the hallway and went into her bedroom, and I opened up her jewelry chest. I put the jewelry chest underneath my arm and walked out right in front of her and said, "Ma'am, I gotta go." And I shook her hand and walked out the door with all the mementos of her lifetime, all the things that her husband had gave her, the entire length of her marriage. And then completely blocked it out. 4 years later is that time when I was sober for a moment, or I was dry anyway, and my mom was talking to me. No, actually it was a different time. I'd been sober for like 6 months. I'd been out for 6 months, and I got stabbed in the eye in a bar fight, right? And it seemed indicated that I should be sober. So my parents let me live with them. I was 24. They said, "Well, you can stay here if you go to AA," right? So I went to AA for a little while. And my mom started talking to me about what I'd done. I went, "What are you talking about? I would never do something like..." And then it all came flooding in. I had completely blocked that out. Completely. I can't think of myself. I could not think of myself as somebody to do that. You know, even my ability to just do anything in the world and just throw it in the grab bag of tricks, right, and forget about it because I got so much alcohol poured all over it. I don't have to think about it. Even that it couldn't even. My brain had to take over and shut that one down. I couldn't face it. So these things that I've done like that all through the years, I can't do the 12 steps. That means I got to tell somebody. I got to tell somebody this. I, at that moment, I didn't care, right? And I walked, my sponsor, Wayne D, he's still in. He's been down since 1988. But we walked into the gym to do my fifth step with me, him, and God, and 500 crazy maniacs running around the gym doing what convicts do in a gym, right? And we sat in a corner, and I gave that and some more stuff, right? I gave him the whole ball of wax, and because I realized that those things, I wasn't taking them to the grave with me. They were taking me to the grave with them, and it was killing me. They were the albatross, the anchor, whatever it was. That they were dragging me to the grave. They were dragging me under. My secrets will kill me. My secrets will kill me today. The level of my secrets today is much less, but it's still a separation between me, you, and God. It still is. So Wayne heard all this, right? And then he started talking. And I realized that I was not the sickest man on the face of the earth. He was, right? It was wonderful. They freed me, man. And I've done that with every sponsee that I've taken through the steps since. Same thing. One guy got close to me, but I had a few zingers left below the way, right? And this is something else I learned in there. I don't care what my motivations are in this world. Doesn't mean nothing. I started drawing cars when I got clean and sober in there, right? Position of service, right? Let me start drawing cars. I did this so that people go, oh, look at Dave, he's so into AA, so good, such a good man. Let's give him a few pats on the back. What a good guy you are. I did it for the notoriety of just being this good, all in, Mr. AA, right? I got that. Well, I got a little bit of it, right? I draw a pretty nice car. But then people start expecting it. And they start staying sober. So there's more and more people to draw cars for. Now we're wanting to draw cars for the outside guests coming in and speaking to us, right? And I'm like, you guys know I could sell these cars, right? And I'm like getting resentful of having to draw all these cars, man. But who else is going to do it? And I've stepped in. Stepped into a position where I can't. I backed myself into a corner. I got to keep going, right? It's my pride keeping me going. Now, first it was wrong motivation. Now it's pride. But you know what? It was the right thing to do. It was the right action, regardless of that. It didn't matter what the motivation was. Eventually, it all turned around, full circle. My motivations changed to the degree that I would cry tears of joy when I got to draw these cards for people. I drew a card for Bernie. And Bernie came in, and he was at the end of his days. He'd worked for JPL and was like, it was incredibly hard for him. Lee had to go through hell and high water to get him cleared to come in the penitentiary because he'd done time for burglary in the 60s, right? He finally told the captain, look, he's got a higher security clearance than the warden of the penitentiary, man. And the captain's like, okay, I guess I'll let him in then, right? Well, he came in at the... He had been really sick. He hadn't been there for a while. And he came in, it was his birthday, and we knew it was his birthday, right? So I had this really beautiful card drawn, and we'd all signed a bunch of stuff on the back. But, you know, we gave him all the love that we had. And he got that card, and he just broke down crying. Now, I don't know, he didn't tell me this, but thinking back on it, I'm like, you know what? If that was me, I would feel at that point in time getting that card like, man, my life was not wasted after all. People loved me. People that, all that stuff I had done wrong, I was able to reach out and touch the heart of another man because he'd done the same thing. You know, I live that members I view quote where it says, I believe that every man's group. Goal from the cradle to the grave is to stand naked and defenseless before another human being and be totally okay with that because that other human being done the same thing. I don't want to be alone anymore. And I know Bernie felt like he was going out alone. That changed me so much. I don't even want to count the things that I keep doing, hoping that my motivation is going to change, right? I don't feel it, right? I'm not feeling like, oh yeah, this is great stuff. That's making me feel so selfless, and you know, I'm really a good guy here now. I'm just doing it because I know it's the right thing to do. And I don't want to drink again. I don't want to be alone again. So I got out after being 7 years clean and sober in that penitentiary, and I've been out now for coming up on 12, January 3rd will be 12 years. So I beat the hell out of that 6 month record that I started when I was 13 years old. I was on parole, probation, or locked up, mainly the latter, for 34 years. From 13 to 44. Wait, I'm having trouble doing the math right now. But I think it's close. It's close. And yeah, call my dad. I've been a member of H&I since I've been out. I knew early on that if I wanted to keep this, I was going to have to do what these people were doing. They saved my life. You know, people like Little Joe and Curtis L. And Little Joe used to tell us, he'd tell us, you know what? I came in here thinking I was going to come carry a message to you guys. You carry the message to me. This is my best meeting. This is the best meeting I've ever been to in my entire life. You should tell us that. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I'll tell you what, we feel really good being told that. We feel like we're on the right path. Right? We sponsored each other in there. We walked each other through the 12 steps and we became different men. We became that man of dignity and honor to a certain degree. The first time I heard somebody's fifth step, I took what that man had given me, which I could have destroyed him with. I could have destroyed him if I let this stuff out. Right? I took everything he'd given to me, and I didn't know what to do with it. And I found a place in my heart that I could put it in and lock it up and throw away the key. I found a sacred space inside me, and I became a trustworthy man in that moment. Listen to somebody else's fifth step. I cannot imagine. I look back on my life and the most happiest, powerful moments that I've ever had, the 7 years I spent on a level 4 penitentiary yard. Doesn't matter what your position, doesn't matter what my position in life is, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter where I am, doesn't matter if I'm broke or if I got money or whether I'm on top of the hill or underneath in the tunnels, doesn't matter. It matters what my relationship with God and my fellow man is. And therefore, that means I better get myself out of the way as quickly and as soonly as humanly possible because I'm the problem. I heard a woman say it one time best. She goes, the calls are coming from inside the house. That was scary. The calls are coming from inside the house. They're coming from in here. And the moment I realized that, I was like, oh my God. I had a cop tell me that one time. He goes, oh. Good. I'm glad you're sober. You don't got time enough on this planet to make all your own mistakes. I was like, oh my God, because that's what I've been doing. That's exactly it. So I have a business. I'm really quick right now. I've got a business. Laguna Beach Electric is my company. I make so much more money than I ever did robbing banks. I still feel like really? I'm going to bill you? I just gave this guy a bill of $20,000 for like a week's work, right? And I'm like, yeah, I like this life, man. This is pretty cool right here, man. I'm a member of H&I. I've gone into the very penitentiaries where I used to be an inmate at. If you want a sufficient substitute for alcohol, you do something like that. Man, I was floating in there, dressed in a real full-on suit, right? And just like, oh my God, and I was a Soledad East Yard, right? And I walked in and this one sergeant was staring at me, right? He was pinning me. I was like, oh no, he knows. He knows. I'm like, what does he know, man? He doesn't know nothing. I'm legit now, right? I've got nothing to hide. I've done all the work. I've done all the work to be in these shoes that I'm wearing right now. I've done all the work to be a member of H&I and to carry the message that you guys gave me. But yeah, a sergeant came over to me, right? And he goes, sir, and that gave me some hope, right? So I said, sir, I just wanted to let you know these guys don't want to listen to anything a man like you might have to say to them. They're just here for the coffee. And I started to explain to him, right? Oh, no, sir, but... And I went like, he won't get it. He won't get it at all. So I went in there and I explained to the fellas. And I said, check this out, what just happened, right? And we're all rolling laughter. He doesn't see. All he sees is the image. He has no idea, man, that beneath this suit, man, is a man who walked those hallways for almost 24 years. Almost. I don't look like my story anymore. So when people tell me that, I just break out smiling. Thank you. Thank you so much, right? Man, I don't have anything more to tell you, but except for one thing. I promise, it's my best friend's 50th birthday today, and I couldn't be down there in SoCal because of various other things, but mainly speaking here tonight. And I told him I'd mention him from the program. So my friend Shane is 50 years sober today. And the single... No, 50 years old, my bad. My best friend's very old. The best single thing I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous, he was on my sober softball team, and he was not sober. He was about to get in a serious train wreck, and we didn't want to be a part of it, right? So I invited him to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that we had at USP Lompo. And he came, and he stayed. He's got 17 years sober now. And he went to three different penitentiaries afterwards that had minimal, if anything, AA. With the force of his personality and a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, he grew up a fellowship around him, second to none. He moved hell and earth to rise a program up around him wherever he went. Best thing I've ever done. Just inviting a man into the program. Come on, see what we got going on. Because he was arguing, right? So like, oh, I've been... Blah, blah, blah. No, I told him, no. You have not seen anything like what we're doing here. It's my truth. It was my experience. I love that man so much. We taught each other how to be a good friend. And like I said, he's still my friend years later, right? I was at the gate to meet him when he came out. I got him a car to drive, and I got him a fake job so he could have freedoms. And, you know, I mean, we actually do for each other what we say we are going to do. This is the most famous line when you're paroling from a penitentiary. Hey, bro, I'm going to look out for you, man. I'm going to send you some stuff, man. I'm going to hook you up. I'm going to hook you up, man. I promise. Here, so let me get some coffee, right? And then you never hear from them again. Not us. It's not what we do. We care for each other. We look out for each other. And we are there for each other. So I'm hoping I was there for you guys tonight. I love you a lot.
Wow. If you could, all newcomers, would you please stand again? Thank you. And let's give our guest speaker another round of applause. Please. And if you have a moment after the meeting, he'll be standing up front here. And if you'd like to say hello, that's welcome. All right. Our...